number two. A few nights ago, on February 21, the CBS Evening News presented a sensational report. The report claimed that Israel had carried out its first atomic bomb test last fall. CBS alleged that the bomb had been exploded over the South Atlantic last September 22, 1979. It was also stated that nearby South Africa had assisted the Israelis in making the atomic test. It all sounded like a neat answer to the famous mystery of the giant double flash in that area several months ago. The mystery began last October 25, 1979. On that date, the United States released a statement through the State Department. The statement began by saying the United States had obtained, quote, an indication suggesting the possibility that a low-yield nuclear explosion occurred on September 22, unquote. Those are very uncertain words. But the rest of the statement was even more vague. For example, the location of the supposed explosion was narrowed down to, quote, an area of the Indian Ocean and South Atlantic, including portions of the Antarctic continent and the southern part of Africa, unquote. That's an area of several million square miles. In addition, the United States government admitted having no corroborating evidence about whatever had happened. And the announcement ended in the doubtful words, "We are continuing to assess whether such an event took place." Many people were very disturbed by the fuzziness of the announcement. It was apparent that something spectacular had taken place near South Africa. Possibly an atomic blast. But the United States was not sure what it was, or where it had happened, or even if it had really happened. Some people wondered, how could this be? We are constantly told that the United States can watch the world with early warning and spy satellites. We are led to believe that no one could fire a missile at us, even from a submarine at sea, without being caught in the act by our satellites. To make matters worse, reporters soon found out that the satellite which picked up the mysterious double flash was not an early warning or spy satellite. It is an aging relic launched a decade ago called a Vela satellite. It is the diehard last survivor of a series of monitoring satellites for the Atmospheric Test Ban Treaty. And it was little more than luck that it happened to spot the mysterious double flash last fall. Had the double flash taken place out of range of the Vela, it would have gone completely undetected by the United States. Because the United States no longer has any spy or early warning satellites continuously orbiting the Earth. Russia finished shooting them down nearly 2 years ago, as I reported in Audio Letter 33 for April 1978. Ever since the United States announcement about the double flash late last October, the mystery about what happened has refused to go away. A panel of scientific consultants were convened by the White House early last November, but they have ended up with no conclusion. Then came the CBS report a few nights ago, describing the alleged atom bomb test by Israel in the South Pacific. My friends, Israel does have the bomb. But the CBS story about a test was a lie. By the very next evening, February 22, CBS was already backing away from its Israeli A-bomb story. The truth is that there was a giant double flash in the South Atlantic last fall. But beyond that point, you have been hearing nothing but lies and inaccurate guesses about the double flash mystery. The lies began with the government announcement of October 25, which gave a falsified date and time for the incident. And since then, the confusion has just kept on growing. My friends, I am now in a position to give you my report on the mystery of the so-called South African double flash. What happened there is something which you need to know about as a matter of survival. The brilliant flashes detected by the Vela satellite were produced by an experimental test, but what was tested was not an atomic bomb. The test was carried out not by Israel or South Africa, but by Russia. And what Russia learned from that test has just been put to use against the United States. The incredible series of storms which have recently devastated Southern California and Arizona were not natural, but man-made. The original State Department announcement of October 25 did not describe what the Vela satellite had seen. It simply said that it appeared to be an atomic test. But within a day or two, word leaked out that it was a pair of blinding flashes, one right after the other. The first one was powerful, but the second was many times more powerful. For months now, debate has been raging over whether this was the result of a nuclear explosion. The light produced by a nuclear blast behaves in a way that is similar to what the satellite detected last fall. That is, there is a bright flash, followed moments later by a second, much brighter flash. So why the big mystery? Just this. Visible light is not the only radiation from an atomic blast. A nuclear explosion sends out floods of deadly gamma rays, X-rays, and neutrons. The Vela satellite is equipped to pick up all those things, if they are present. But they were not present. There was a giant double flash of light only. No X-rays, no gamma rays, no neutrons. And afterward, no radioactive fallout could be found anywhere in the world. Acoustic sensors on Earth confirmed that some kind of giant explosion had taken place. But the question remained, what kind of explosion? My friends, last month I reminded you of the giant air booms of 2 years ago off America's East Coast. For many weeks, thousands of people from South Carolina to Connecticut and elsewhere were being frightened out of their wits by the booms. Public officials dreamed up all kinds of ridiculous cover stories to try to explain them away. Since that time, the official cover stories about the booms have been proven to be nonsense by Cornell University scientists and others. But to our rulers, the only thing that matters is that people forgot about the booms after a while. The real reason for those air booms 2 years ago was what I reported in Audio Letter 29 for December 1977. They were being produced by several newly deployed Russian hovering space platforms. These platforms, called Cosmospheres, constitute the third leg of Russia's secret space triad. And they were creating those giant air booms by defocused firing of their charged particle beam weapons into the atmosphere. In later audio letters, I reported much more about the Cosmospheres, including their use in weather modification. But the Cosmospheres all by themselves have never been as effective in weather modification as desired by Russia. Russian scientists have been hard at work to devise more powerful techniques of weather warfare as a contingency weapon. And now, they have succeeded in developing a newer and more powerful system for weather modification. Russia's newly operational weather war system involves two legs of their space triad working together. One leg consists of the Cosmospheres. The other leg is the Moon, with its network of giant particle beam weapons. When I first reported on Russia's new Cosmospheres in Audio Letter 29, I also reported on the first operational test of the Russian Moon bases. The particle beam weapons on the Moon are at least 100 times more powerful than those aboard the hovering Cosmospheres. When fired at the Earth, they can produce instant destruction over a wide area. So for their first test firing, they chose a target area where they thought the effects would go unnoticed by everyone else. But their choice turned out to be a tragic one. In Audio Letter 29, I described that test firing from the Moon at the Earth.
The following is an emergency message to Dr. Beter's listeners. This audio letter has been delayed because Dr. Beter suffered a heart attack before he could complete it. To avoid further delay, he has requested that the rest of his urgent message be sent to you in printed form. This will be done as quickly as possible within the next few days. You will receive a transcript of the remainder of Dr. Beter's speaking notes. We know that many of you are concerned with Dr. Beter's well-being and will want word of his progress, but we ask you to please resist the desire to call. Instead, we invite you to write any messages of encouragement to Dr. Beter's office. The address is Dr. Peter Beter, 1629 K Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20006. Bulletins about Dr. Beter's progress will be sent periodically to all active subscribers. If you are not a subscriber but wish to receive the next bulletin about Dr. Beter, please send a stamped, self-addressed envelope for that purpose. During the past 7 years, Dr. Beter has been giving his life for us Americans. Now, Dr. Beter and his family need our support. Let us all unite daily in prayer, and let us ask for Dr. Beter's total recovery and his ability to continue his mission to benefit us all.
I will read the rest of Dr. Beter's newsletter. In audio letter number 29, I described that test firing from the moon at the earth. There was a huge cyclone in the Bay of Bengal, south of India. It was a giant storm many hundreds of miles across, the perfect cover for a test firing, or so the Russians thought. But they made a small miscalculation as they chose their aiming point at the earth. They knew that the particle beam would be deflected by the earth's electromagnetic field and tried to correct for it. But there was a small error in that correction, and as a result, the particle beam blasted the sea too close to the Indian coastline. In audio letter number 29, I quoted the words of an eyewitness who saw the results. She was a British relief worker who told the BBC, "There were two enormous blinding flashes, and the whole sky lit up as though on fire. Then this vast tidal wave, about 30 miles in length along the coast and 18 feet high, just bore down upon them." My friends, the giant double flash, which I reported over 2 years ago in connection with the Indian cyclone disaster, had the same source as the giant double flash last fall in the South Atlantic. Both were caused by Russian particle beam weapons fired from the moon. When a target on Earth is to be fired at from the moon, a pair of beam weapons are fired in sequence. First one, then the other. That is what I reported to you in audio letter number 29 over 2 years ago. The first blast is largely dissipated in the atmosphere. In the process, it creates an ionized condition called a confinement channel through the air. Moments later, the second beam is fired at the same spot, and it follows the confinement channel right down to the Earth's surface. The target on the Earth's surface, even if it is the sea itself, explodes violently. And so a lunar particle beam attack creates a double flash. The first flash is somewhat diffused since it takes place mainly in the air, but the second flash is more concentrated and intense. This, my friends, is what our tired old Vela satellite accidentally picked up last fall in the South Atlantic. When the government here made the first announcement about it on October 25, 1979, they lied about both its date and time. The official story is that the double flash took place about 3 a.m. in the early morning hours of September 22, 1979, but it actually took place on October 22, just 3 days before the October 25th announcement about it. October 22 was the same day that the former Shah of Iran arrived in New York City. On one hand, the Russians were maneuvering the Shah in hopes of undoing the Bolshevik Iran crisis strategy, as I have reported in audio letters 52 and 53. But at the same time, the Russians were also gearing up for hostilities in case their maneuvers with the Shah should fall apart. As a matter of interest, I can also report to you that the double flash took place around 3 p.m. in the afternoon, not 3 a.m. as claimed officially. The United States government falsified the time and date as a trap for the unwary, and many have fallen into that trap. the CBS fairy tale of February 21st about an Israeli A-bomb test is only one example. At the time of the initial public reports about the double flash last October, the Russian experiment in the South Atlantic was still in progress. It had begun on October 22, when two lunar particle beams were aimed at a location in the South Atlantic. The desired bullseye was at the navigational coordinates 35 degrees south, 26 degrees west. This point is on a parallel with the lower tip of South Africa, but is slightly closer to South America than to Africa. Two of the Russian particle beam weapons on the moon zeroed in and prepared to fire. Meanwhile, a quadrangle of cosmospheres were ranged around the target area. The four cosmospheres were deployed at the corners of a square 800 miles on a side, concentrated on the bullseye at sea. They were hovering at an altitude of 100 miles. It was expected that the moon bases would achieve much better accuracy this time than they had 2 years ago. But just to be safe, the cosmospheres were deployed well away from the target. Then the two moon weapons fired at the Earth. Firing from a quarter million miles away in space, the beams missed the center of the 800-mile target square by only a little over 10 miles. The resulting double flash was centered at roughly 34 degrees, 54 minutes south, 26 degrees, 10 minutes west. Tremendous quantities of seawaters in the target zone flashed instantly into superheated steam. The hot water vapor and surrounding hot air started rising fast toward the stratosphere. Cooler air started racing into the target zone to fill the vacuum. The inward rushing winds began to swirl due to the Earth's rotation, and the barometric pressure began dropping in the target zone. Within minutes, the atmosphere above the target zone was a spiraling chimney of tumbling, rising air and water vapor. The world's first totally man-made storm cell was being born over the South Atlantic. The powerful beams fired from the moon had started the process. Then it was up to the quadrangle of cosmospheres to keep it going. The vast quantities of water vapor sent skyward by the blast began condensing rapidly in the cool upper air. Normally, this would have led quickly to localized rain showers. As a result, most of the water would have rained right back into the sea, not far from the target area. But the four cosmospheres were there to prevent that. Right after the moon shots that produced the giant double flash, the cosmospheres went to work. Each began firing a powerful electron beam into the target zone in a defocused mode. The electrons mingled into the rising torrents of water vapor, giving a negative charge to the water droplets as they formed. This caused the tiny droplets to repel each other, so that they could not condense into rain. So the water vapor was forced to stay aloft instead of raining back down into the sea. The cosmospheres remained on station for several more days in order to complete the experiment. They were able to confirm that the artificial storm clouds remained stable, drifting eastward with the winds. They also monitored the target zone itself to learn how fast conditions would return to normal. Then they finally dispersed. In early November 1979, the artificial storm cell was left to dissipate gradually of its own accord, and as a result, it attracted no attention. Early last month, on January 4, 1980, the United States announced what amounts to a new Cold War. A whole series of embargoes and restrictions against Russia were initiated. The most important of these was the embargo of 17 million metric tons of grain ordered by Russia. The grain embargo, my friends, is an effort by the Bolsheviks here to hit the Russians right where they live. 4 days after it was announced, the grain embargo was described by a White House spokesman as the most punitive of all steps against Russia. And ever since then, the Bolsheviks here have been twisting arms worldwide to force other countries to do the same. Early this month, on February 6th, the Russians summed up their view of all this. Throughout the Soviet press that day, there were stories that the Carter administration wants to starve the Russian people. And since the Bolsheviks always use starvation as a tool of power, this was no idle comment by Russia. The very next day, there began to be reports of strange developments in the weather of the southwestern United States. For example, northern New Mexico experienced a heavy snowstorm combined with thunder and lightning. but it was the following week on February 13th that the real weather news began. Unprecedented rainstorms began pounding Southern California and Arizona. Day after day they came, one incredible storm right after another. Dams filled and then began overflowing. Levees broke. Houses washed into canyons. Caskets floated away from the cemeteries. Mudslides caught several victims and buried them alive. Bridges washed out. Entire communities became flooded and marooned. Phoenix endured a flood so vast that another like it would not be expected for 500 years. And in the vital agricultural areas of Southern California, damage was mounting fast. On February 19th, the seventh day of the rains, a CBS Evening News report said, "It's like an organized assault, one storm after another." And an organized assault is exactly what it was, my friends. Centered at a point 576 miles west of San Diego, a quadrangle of Russian cosmospheres was in operation. Based on the results of their double flash experiment last fall, the Russians have refined their technique, and each time the moon bases fire at the Earth, they are becoming more accurate. So the quadrangle west of San Diego was only about 100 miles on a side, and the cosmospheres were at the decreased altitude of 40 miles. Using the technique tested last October in the South Atlantic, the Russians were creating the storm cells one after another. And this time they did not just let the cells drift away to dissipate. Instead, they were drawn precisely to the areas to be attacked in Southern California and Arizona. Then the storms were triggered by additional cosmospheres hovering over those areas. 85 miles above Yuma, Arizona, there were a pair of cosmospheres. Nearly 100 miles to the north, another cosmosphere duo were hovering over the vicinity of Blythe, California. Both locations are on the Colorado River, bordering California's crucial Imperial Valley agricultural area. These cosmosphere duos used their beam weapons to load the atmosphere with protons, which are positively charged. This attracted the artificial storm cells with their negatively charged clouds. That is why the storms pounded exactly the same areas time after time after time. And it was also the proton clouds that triggered the actual storms. They neutralized the electrons in the storm clouds, the water condensed into rain, and the devastating storms were the result. Finally, after 9 days and over $500 million in damage, the Russians called a halt to the storms for the moment. But this, my friends, is only a sample of what may lie ahead for food-producing areas throughout the United States. While the Western weather disaster was filling the headlines, the Russians were also testing out their weather control system in less dramatic ways all over the United States. A total of 5 more cosmosphere quadrangles at sea and 15 more cosmosphere duels over land were involved. The Russians are determined to retaliate in kind for the Bolshevik starvation campaign against Russia. If the American Bolsheviks keep to this food boycott against Russia, then American food shortages will be making headlines by this time next year. In the meantime, you still have a chance to stock up on storable foods. And, my friends, I would waste no time in doing just that. Topic number 3. It has now been more than a year and a half since I first revealed America's shift to a first-strike military strategy. Many of my listeners were shocked when I made this public. Never, they said, the United States would never strike first in a nuclear war. But how fast things change. A few days ago, on February 21st, Defense Department spokesman Thomas Ross gave a briefing to reporters. He said that if Russia should go beyond Afghanistan, it could lead to a nuclear confrontation. And he added that in that event, the United States might shoot first. Our Bolshevik rulers are determined to bring about nuclear war against Russia, no matter how suicidal it may be. But to do that, they have to have the support of you and me, the American people. And to keep our support, the Bolsheviks here are hiding the truth of our military situation from us. They build up our anger at Russia and then tell us how backward Russia is. They are conditioning us to believe that we will have to fight Russia and egging us on with lies that we can win. These stories we always hear about Russia's backwardness may comfort us now, but they will not help us when war comes. The difference between Russia and the United States is one of emphasis, not ability. We Americans have been living in luxury with all the comforts, but we are living in a fragile glass tower. By contrast, the Russian way of life is modest, but they are living in a powerful fortress. Soon the earth will tremble with the blows of nuclear war one, and it will not be the fortress, but the glass tower that shatters and falls in ruins. We Americans may look down our noses at Russian consumer technology and feel smug. Yet when it comes to military technology, the Russians have dealt the West many surprises over the years. For example, one day nearly 20 years ago, NATO and other observers were in Moscow to watch an aerial display on Aviation Day. Various Russian airplanes roared over, and the NATO observers tried to spot any new details they could detect, but they got more than they had bargained for. Suddenly, a big, sleek airplane thundered over, which was totally unknown in the West. It had swept back wings and two enormous engines on the tail. It was obviously a bomber, and it was also obvious that it was supersonic. The stunned NATO observers watched with mouths agape. The shock deepened as the first mystery plane was followed by 9 more exactly like it. It was a highly advanced warplane. It was in quantity production, and it was a complete surprise to NATO. When they recovered from the shock, NATO aviation officials assigned the code name Blinder to the plane. If you're not a military specialist, you have probably never even heard of the Blinder, much less the jarring surprise it gave to the West. But the supersonic Blinder of two decades ago was produced by Russia's Tupolev Design Bureau, and you have heard a great deal about a more recent Tupolev supersonic bomber. It's called the Backfire. Now the Tupolev aircraft team in Russia is once again involved in a major military surprise. In topic number one, I described the unsuccessful attempt last month to mount a nuclear first strike against Russia. The cities of Voronezh, Krakow, and Kazan were targeted because of the Tupolev plants located there. They are the temporary bases for an airborne anti-ballistic missile, or ABM, system, which is about to become operational. The system is to be a last-ditch backup for the cosmospheres, which are hovering over our country. The cosmospheres are supposed to blast our ICBMs at the moment of launch, but in case a few should get through, the Russians plan to blast them during re-entry over Russia. The new Russian ABM system uses charged particle beam weapons carried by Tu-144 supersonic transports. At a glance, the Tu-144 looks similar to the Anglo-French Concorde, but the Tu-144 is bigger, considerably faster, and radically different in some very important ways. Among other things, Russian civil transports are always designed with the option for military conversion built in, and the Tu-144 is no exception. In June 1978, the Tu-144s were suddenly removed from service by the Soviet airline Aeroflot, without explanation. Western commentators crowed that they had turned out to be too expensive to fly, but they were actually returned to the Tupolev plants for military conversion, to be outfitted with charged particle beams. This process is now nearing completion. Late last month, the Tu-144 flying ABM system passed a major hurdle. It was tested against a missile with complete success. But the Russians encoded the data from the target missile, making it impossible for the United States to learn any details. Western analysts were able to tell that something happened to the missile in mid-flight, but nothing more. And so, my friends, we are heading for the moment of truth. The Russians are speeding up their preparations to survive the kamikaze war plans of the Bolsheviks now here in America. But for America, the countdown is underway toward the day of chastisement. Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.